This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
On to another end of this conversation, an anonymous caller reached a volunteer search collective in Mexico on June 10th and claimed Nancy Guthrie's remains were buried in the Mariposa area near a stream by the border. The group, I'm probably going to say it wrong. I know you say it lovely every time. Jen, why don't you just say it for me so I don't do it?
Oh, well, I have to read it.
Buscando, Coronazos, Nogales? I think that's correct.
Buscando's Corazones.
Oh, see, look, it
much
just rolled
better
off your tongue.
Much more beautifully said than I had. They went out and they searched the site. They found nothing connecting to Nancy. What they found months earlier during broader searches from April to May, allegedly they found more than 25 unmarked graves containing the remains of at least 32 people in the same area. The sheriff's department says it learned about the search from media reports. Mexican authorities haven't contacted them, according to authorities in the U.S. 4 months in, the search for Nancy crossed an international border, and the people running her case apparently found out from the news. The phrase I keep hearing a lot of is we haven't been contacted by Mexican authorities. Mexican authorities have not confirmed this or that. Considering the track record of Mexican authorities and the country in general, how much are we putting too much weight on what Mexican authorities are going to be contacting anybody on in terms of law enforcement or solving a crime of this nature, considering the utter chaos that's going on with cartels and such?
No, I mean, you bring up a great point, such a valid point. Look, the Mexican authorities, the federales, are in cahoots with the cartels.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. So they are really a criminal organization and enterprise in and amongst themselves. Now, that's not to say that in cases that don't involve the cartel or cases where they can be of assistance that they won't be. In this case, you know, I don't know, but you have to go check those graves. You have to check every leaf. I think it's a bit of a shot in the dark, but it's possible she could have been delivered there. I think a lot of us have talked about that's a 50-50 proposition. It's most likely that she's in and around the Tucson area, everyone. Most likely. They're not going to take her that far, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, Jen, so tell me your thoughts on this, because this is what I posed on our show on Friday when Tony shared that, hey, they found like 27 graves and 32 bodies. Was, from my perspective, if you just reverse it, if you're looking for some attention that a family members have lost family members, like your son's gone, your daughter's gone, they went missing, you know the cartel's involved, and you know the federales aren't going to do anything, what better way to get attention to trying to find your loved ones or bring attention to this than say Nancy Guthrie's buried here? So my conjecture on this one is that there's possibly this is some poor loved one trying to use the Nancy Guthrie case to help bring attention to the fact you have a dumping ground of bodies that the cartels have here. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great, great point. I think it could be possible with why the anonymous person came forward. But at the end of the day, what are they exactly going to do? Are they going to do, you know, IgG on all of these people? Are they going to take, who's going to pay the money to even do DNA analysis at the lowest level? Who's going to do that?
Well, and to that point, and you said it so great, you have to follow every single lead you get. My thought process is they know that the FBI, because I mean, shows like us say it, you know, when you have people like us on, it's like you follow every single lead down. And so if they're looking for some positive ID of a family member, if you think some law enforcement from the U.S. is going to come in and try to do DNA evidence to try to identify, because, I mean, so you do your empathetic, you know, thought process here. If you're a family member and you're trying to draw attention to this, you have a much better than a zero probability. You at least have a probability that if you can get in the public eye in the United States and even get Savannah's family involved to fund any sense of attempt to try to find family members that are maybe in this pit or however they're placed there, you have a higher probability and chance of that happening than if you did nothing at all.
Well, I think at least they could discern women versus children versus obviously There's some things that you could easily discern. But boy, that further testing.
Or even just articles. So if you think, you know, I mean, so you have articles of clothing, you have momentum. I mean, who knows, right? But you don't know until you, as a family member, you give it a shot. I mean, if you, just think of what you would do as, you know, what each of us would do as a parent. It's like, if you knew there might be something to this, man, you're gonna do all you can.
I want to, throw this out there because, I mean, it's a point you made right away, Jen, that if dancing is gone, she's likely buried in or around the Tucson area.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I mean, and the reasoning for that is really quite simple. The longer you're traveling somewhere with a body, the more chances you have of somebody finding you traveling somewhere with a body. So you're best off to dispose of it at a relatively local area so you don't have to be traveling with that body. If you're going to go across the border, you have a couple options. You can go through the legal route and hope nobody searches your vehicle. I mean, or there's obviously back-end routes that people can take with a body, which is not necessarily, you know, as advantageous as if you're just doing it yourself. What would the incentive be to take Nancy's body to Mexico to bury it if she died in the house or died shortly after the house? I don't really see why anyone would take that risk, killer or not, or whatever it may be, that just totally opens up your window for being caught. I mean, I get the idea of, well, there's less likelihood that she's going to be identified or found there, but you are increasing your odds of being identified and found getting the body there.
Well, you're exactly right. And if you look at this, first of all, I do want to say I 100% believe she was alive on that porch because we see expirated blood.
Yeah.
And that, so I do believe 100% she was alive. For how long? I don't think it was probably very long because I think they blindfolded her and put her in that trunk and she's just so frail. Mm-hmm. Secondarily to that, though, to your point about this whole Mexican cross, now you're going to be in the car with her for about an hour and a half, something like that. It is in the middle of the night, so it's possible that you'll never really be seen. But what about traffic cameras? What about that cop that happens to see you and pull you over for whatever reason? I totally agree with you. And remember, very early on, and I have this communique, if you don't, Tony, it's the one that Mexican authorities, the federales again, but they said they were never contacted from the FBI on this case. This was in February, right after this mm-hmm. happened. So they're saying, listen, they didn't call us. My point to this is why? Why is the signal sniffer looking within 2 miles of Nancy's house? Why is one person they arrested within or detained within 2 miles of Nancy's house? Why is the other one within, you know, I don't know whatever it was, 30 minutes, 40 minutes of Nancy's house? They are looking. If we look at the actions of law enforcement, they are looking right in around that area. And they know so much more than we know. But that tells us what they know.
Yeah, when you said the FBI never contacted federales too, because the next thing that popped in my mind is, how could the LEGAT not at least talk to liaison? So the FBI's got LEGATs all over the world, and we have a LEGAT in Mexico City. It's hard to imagine. You don't need direction. I mean, one of the reasons why you're a LEGAT, you're an FBI agent representing our law enforcement interests in a foreign country, is because you have the ability to take initiative, you have great relationship skills. It'd be hard-pressed to think the LEGAT, without even any direction, wouldn't reach out to the local and say, hey, can you check on this? And so that's the whole thing's just weird. Why wouldn't the LEGAT reach out just on their own automatically? I would.
I agree. At least with the bolo. At least
yeah,
with the
yeah.
picture. But again, they're not even putting the picture, I know I'm preaching, a porch guy in Spanish on any, you know, signs. It's mind-boggling to me, unless they know who this is. Why aren't you doing that? Why isn't that all over Mexico?
I guess that's the question, is if do they know who this is, and they're trying to prevent them from going further underground? And the strategy is to play stupid. We haven't been in communication. We're not going to plaster your face everywhere because we don't want you to go further underground. Although you're kind of rolling the dice there. The more people see it, the more likely they're going to be identified if they're out there in the ether. I mean, it's a bit of a gamble there, but that's the only thing that seems to make some semblance of sense as for the procedures that have taken place in this and where they've landed or have not landed. Or it could be the simple answer is incompetence.
Robin, and you and I right now, we're in the squadron. And you and I have this as case agents on this case. Is there any part of you that if you have no idea who Porch Guy is there any semblance when I say, Robin, let's change all the billboards over. It's not going to cost anything to have Porch Guy's mug and also listed in Spanish what happened. What are you going to say to me as my co-case agent? Jen, you're stupid. Don't do that. Or, yeah, maybe we should do that.
I got a big fuck yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what you do. You know, so when you exhaust everything and it costs nothing to do more, because it always, you know, inside organizations, so here's how the sausage is made again. I love talking about this with you, Jen, you know, and for the audience is like, here's what goes on behind the scenes. What resources at your disposal, personnel and financial, that you can actually do more towards cases? And if you are telling me that we have the resources to do more, why wouldn't you do more? Because if this is exhausted, in other words, you thought you had a full sponge and you've wrung it completely dry and there's nothing there, go over here. Why wouldn't you? Because it costs you no bandwidth, zero. So then it comes down to this. For some reason, because what's the motivation of all human beings? They don't do anything that inspires them to feel unsafe or insecure with their futures or their careers or something. For some reason, someone doesn't feel safe in doing more, which is really boggling in this one.
Or the only other reason is if I look at you and propose that, you say, but Jen, we already know who it is.
That's the other, that could be it too.
That's the only reason you don't do that. How about this? How about searches stopped the day after?
Yeah, that was now, weird too.
Pima County's choice, despite all these people coming in, all these people saying they can help. I mean, you know, we've talked about the Cajun Navy, Madres, Buscadores.
Or you just have what we saw from the beginning, extreme incompetence and narcissistic of Pima County that says
survey
we got
says?
This. Yeah. Because you're right. Because it's literally. So we'll go to one of Jen's great Occam razors here. It's as simple as explanation. Either they know who it is, or they're really fucking stupid.
That's literally, that is what we are left at. They know who it is, so they don't need to search. They don't need to have any billboards. They don't care about what certificate says because they are convinced that X is responsible. So then, riddle me this. Why, when early in the case, they had not probable cause, well, they had probable cause to do searches and to seize cars, but not probable cause to detain somebody. They had reasonable suspicion to do a right. detain. Riddle me this. They came in like a SWAT. It was reported that HRT was there.
They descended.
I believe there's a mix of everything going on.
Yeah, because I know people that were there part of HRT and they were rerouted there because Kash Patel wanted a presence there too. So I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many machinations going on behind the scenes from image that you're trying to maintain, attention you're trying to do, notoriety. I mean, there's so many. Because remember, everyone's always acting in their own best interest. It's so hard to tell when you have so many people vested in the outcome that they're looking for because you have so many differing priorities as well, as opposed to just the one, financing, solve the case. And yet you have all these other people's careers, priorities, promotions, not getting unelected into sheriff positions. I mean, there's so much noise. It's so hard to filter it down into what the motivations for the behaviors are. It can be overwhelming.
But my point, Robin, is, and Tony, is if you have this name, if you have this person, right? If we're at, it's either A or B, Occam's razor, and you have that, I think you would see the same dynamic approach if you believe you know who did it. I mean, my gosh, he could be alive. I mean, nobody can say emphatically she's dead. No one can. So you would do that because also you've got some guy that could do this again, whether they do a wrench attack, whether the people say, hey, you did a pretty good job. Nobody's found you in 4 months. Why don't we give it another whirl over here?
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, I mean, the it seemed like forever, even though it wasn't forever. The person that they actually were zeroing in on, and everyone was giving them a lot of grief because they didn't think they were, was Koberger. And, you know, they had a really good idea it was him. They'd start tracing him. And so what do you think? So let's take glass half full. They know who this person is. What's the delay in having more leakage on movement on from us not seeing much?
Well, that's the thing. And everybody's, no matter what network, whether you go to News Nation network or you go to ABC, NBC, everybody tracking this, they're all saying that their sources say there's nothing. Nobody has anything. Nobody knows anything. And so if we're to believe that, and then that's why there's no leakage. There's nothing to leak.
Yeah.
But then so then they don't have a name.
That's why... mainstream media.
Or it hasn't leaked.
I don't think they know.
I think we need to get a Ouija board and summon the ghost of Ray Combs to bring us back and answer the question. We'll do a ghostly family feud. What's going on? Why wasn't this working? And I think we might get some answers. I don't know. I feel like there's certainly wonderful, very dedicated, well-meaning, hardworking, intelligent people on this case. But I feel like at the end of the day, the answer to why we're not anywhere with this is probably ego and incompetence. For the survey... ding. I think that's what where it might be. I don't know. Time will tell. Time will certainly tell. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. Here now, Tony Brewski.
All right, as we continue on this week's five-part series, talking about the Nancy Guthrie case and the theories, we're trying to hit five theories, if you will, or five areas in this case of where people think she is, the internet, where they think she is. And we are trying to... I think debunk maybe is too strong word, but I think it's applicable in a lot of this, debunking a lot of them, but also just providing a counter argument to make you think. Because that's important. It's easy to go down a rabbit hole here and go, oh, okay, then dig in. And then when you start hearing conflicting information that's not quite in line with what, you know, our brains aren't great at that. What if the two most shared pieces of evidence of the Nancy Guthrie case, the ones people cite in every comment section, the ones that launched entire theory ecosystems, were completely made up? Not misinterpreted, not taken out of context, fabricated. One is a YouTube video that invented Nancy Guthrie's entire professional identity. The other is a set of Google searches that the internet swore proved premeditation until Google itself said they were never made. This isn't an episode about whether the internet got the details wrong. Everybody gets details wrong. This is about something worse. This is about how the internet manufactured evidence that didn't exist, dressed it up as investigative work, and watched it spread until it became part of the mythology of this case. One of these fabrications was so specific, so confidently presented, that the only way to debunk it was to get the company on record. And they did. The other one didn't just invent a story. It invented a person, and the person in it described has nothing in common with the real Nancy Guthrie. Let's go into this. Your thoughts in the comments section. Substack, YouTube links are in the description. Let me give you some context for why this kind of content thrives in this particular case. The Nancy Guthrie investigation has a massive audience, a desperate family, a long... many, many long stretches between public updates. Tens of thousands of people are following every development. And when there aren't any developments, they're still watching. There's a vacuum, and the internet fills vacuums, not with information, but with content. Videos that look like reporting, but aren't. Data that looks like evidence, but isn't. The format of investigation without any of the discipline behind it, the two fabrications we're about to walk through, didn't go viral because people are foolish. They went viral because they were packaged to look real. And once something looks real in a case this big, it moves faster than anyone can correct it. Let's start with the YouTube video. On February 14th, less than 2 weeks after Nancy disappeared, someone uploaded a 25-minute video titled, "Just Now, New Evidence Links $32 Billion Pharma Fraud to Nancy Guthrie's Disappearance." Professional narration, graphics. It's an older gentleman. The tone, pacing, very much like it looks real. I saw it. Right away, I'm like, what is this? It felt like investigative reporting. And its own opening moments, it stated the fact that Nancy Guthrie was an 84-year-old pharmaceutical compliance officer, though, who vanished from her home. And she was also from Columbus, Ohio. There's some problems right away with that. Nancy Guthrie was born in Fort Wright, Kentucky. She never she's lived in Tucson, Arizona for more than 50 years. She's a retired grandmother. She was never a pharmaceutical compliance officer. She's never lived in Columbus, Ohio. The video fabricated her professional identity, placed her in a different state for a good chunk of her life, and built a 25-minute conspiracy theory in a foundation that doesn't exist. It made up a person. The theory, as it evolved online, Nancy was a whistleblower involved in exposing massive pharmaceutical fraud. Her disappearance was retaliation by powerful corporate interests. A supposed kidnapping was actually a professional hit designed to silence her. The FBI wasn't investigating a crime. They were covering one up. Every single layer of that theory rests on one claim, that Nancy Guthrie had a professional connection to the healthcare industry. Guess what? She didn't. There was one search, Nancy Guthrie Tucson, returns her real identity instantly. Her family is publicly known. Her daughter is one of the most recognizable journalists in America. Her background has been reported by every major outlet covering the case. Not a single credible source has ever described Nancy as anything other than a retired grandmother who lived independently in Tucson. However, nobody who shared that video ran that search first, or connected the dots of what they already knew, because it was new information that came in. When you hear that, you go, I did. I was like, well, was she back when she was working years ago before retirement, was she a pharmaceutical? I mean, it seems like it could be plausible. I mean, you could have told me she was an aerospace engineer too, and I'd be like, sure, I don't know, maybe. She probably could have done anything. I don't know the answer to that. When you don't know the answer to it and somebody is purportedly telling you that, your brain goes, oh, fill in the blank. Okay, seems real, especially the way this was delivered. So where did the fabrication come from? This appears to be a case of two unrelated people sharing a last name. There is a congressman named Brett Guthrie who chairs a committee involved in healthcare fraud legislation. He has no relation to Nancy Guthrie. The shared surname seems to be where the seed was planted. Someone connected to unrelated Guthries and a content creator built a 25 AI video on the coincidence, except didn't say anything about it being a coincidence, just made up a whole story. The video racked up hundreds of thousands of views. It's still live, still accumulating views, still being cited in comment sections as evidence months into the case. People watching it right now have no reason to suspect the foundational claim was invented because it's presented with all the trappings of legitimate reporting. That's what makes it dangerous. Not the theory itself, the packaging. AI is very scary right now, and it's going to continue to be until we can start figuring out what's real and what's not and understanding it. We didn't do a very good job of that before AI. I'll say that. We were very quick to go, oh, that's fake. That's this. Now, back when you really couldn't fake things this well, people were saying, it's that. No. Now you really can fake it that well. There's a whole channel that on this video. And they fill it with other news stories, too, as if it's this older gentleman talking about all these things in a very balanced, psychological deep dive. It feels real. It does feel real if you've seen it. And it's presented almost as a news channel. and people are believing it. Let's talk about the Google searches, because this one might be even worse. In the weeks after Nancy's disappearance, screenshots started circulating online that appear to show Google Trends data. The claims, someone in Arizona searched for Nancy Guthrie's Tucson address between June 21st and June 28th of the previous year. Woo! Months before the kidnapping, the address was supposedly searched again January 11th and between December 13th and 20th. The search term Savannah Guthrie salary was entered from Tucson. The implications were enormous. This was premeditation. Someone had been researching Nancy's home and her daughter's wealth for months before they took her. Spread everywhere. Comment sections, theory threads, YouTube breakdowns, treating the Google searches as established fact, building elaborate timelines of the suspect's planning phase. The Savannah Guthrie salary search became one of the most cited data points in the entire case. Proof, people said. This was financially motivated and carefully planned. Like, people don't automatically, randomly search those things every single damn day anyhow. But to be sure, Brian Anton addressed it. News Nation's lead reporter on the Guthrie case, a journalist who's been on the ground in Tucson from the beginning, told his audience that his team contacted Google directly. Google's response, the search data as presented online, was not accurate. The searches as described didn't happen. The screenshots were either manipulated, misread, or fabricated entirely. Google said so on the record. The most cited evidence of premeditation in the Nancy Guthrie case was not real. There you go. People weren't just misinterpreting real data. The data itself wasn't real. They saw a screenshot that looked like real data and said, must be real. And by the time Google weighed in, the theory built on those searches has already become part of the case's accepted mythology. It has been repeated so many times by so many accounts that people treat it as settled fact. We know someone searched for her address months earlier. No, we don't know that because it didn't happen. These two fabrications came from different sources, spread on different platforms, built different theories, but they share a structure. Both took a real element, Nancy's last name, Google Trends as data source, and grafted fabricated specifics onto it. Both were packaged to look like genuine investigative work. Both spread because they gave the audience what it wanted, a feeling of understanding, a sense that the case was solvable if you just had the right information, and both could have been debunked with a single verification step that nobody took before hitting share. That's the pattern worth naming in the Nancy Guthrie case. There's an entire ecosystem of fabricated content, AI narrative videos, invented evidence, fictional timelines presented as facts, the healthcare fraud video, and the Google searches are just the most extreme examples. Content creators are manufacturing conspiracy theories about a real missing person for views and ad revenue. They're not investigating. They're not helping. They're monetizing a family's worst nightmare with content built on lies. I'm not telling you to stop following the case. I'm not telling you to stop asking questions. The instinct to care about what happened to Nancy Guthrie is a good instinct, but there's a line and it gets crossed the moment you stop checking whether the evidence you're sharing is real. When a video tells you an 84-year-old grandmother from Tucson is a pharmaceutical compliance officer from Columbus, Ohio, and you share it without spending 10 seconds verifying it, you've crossed from caring into causing harm. Not theoretical harm, but real harm to real tip lines, to real investigations, to a real family that's living through something most of us can't imagine. Nancy Guthrie is a retired grandmother. She was taken from her home. The case is now a homicide investigation. None of it has anything to do with a healthcare fraud. And nobody in Arizona searched for Savannah Guthrie's salary in December. Those aren't options or opinions. Those are verified facts. And the people who made up the alternative versions are still collecting views on the content they built from nothing. Next up, the family. That one. We're going to get into it. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our conversations on this and the many cases we follow for you. Your thoughts in the comment section, Substack, YouTube, links are in the description. We will talk again real soon. I'm Tony Bruce.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Out at McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken meal deal o un $6 McDouble meal deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.